Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody, and Merry Christmas. It's hard to believe we're already at the week of Christmas week. But I want to wish you and yours Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, all of the above, and say thank you so much for being a regular part of our listening audience. By the way, we also want to say thank you to our sponsors as well as to our listeners. Our sponsors make this possible. Alice Alvey at Mortgage U, Joe Farr at MBS Quote Line, of course, my own firm, Mortgage Banking Solutions, and then also our latest sponsor who is with us, we're so thrilled to have be a part of us, is producing some products and programs, New Penn Financial is who I'm talking about, sorry about that, left the name out, some new products and programs coming to the market that are just out of agency. We're going to be talking more about that in the program. Very encouraging to see them, but we welcome New Penn Financial. If you want to learn more about New Penn's just out of agency loan programs, go over to our website, www.lickinonlending.com. And click on that link. It'll take you right in there. Also, there's a 1-800 number you can dial to learn more. So good to have you be with us each and every week. And without further ado, the most important part of the program today, we got Jay Brinkman, Chief Economist for the MBA with us. Very exciting, very dynamic discussion that we've got coming up. So excited to have Jay here with us. And he's a good friend and someone, and the MBA, of course, great friends. And we're thrilled to have them be a part of the program. And today we're going to get into economic forecast, looking about what's the future of Fannie and Freddie, what's going on QM, QRM, what's going on with rates, housing, all the projections, looking forward into the new year. So it'll be just a good discussion. But as we do each and every week, we start off with a look at what's going on in the world of interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you on the program. Today, what do you got in your focus? Europe.
Right. Again, this morning, that was the cause for movement. MBS prices started out this morning a little lower than they are now. They were down 5/32 for a good bit of the morning, but they've rallied to be back to where they ended the day Friday. And it was European officials, the head of the ECB bank made statements that made it clear that they were not going to be the solution to the problem, saying that their bond buying programs were temporary. As you might guess, the Dow stocks fell a bit, and MBS prices improved. Not a full-blown flight to quality, but enough to move the market a little bit.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say we'll hear more about Europe and what Jay thinks about Europe up later on in the show.
I can't wait to get into some of his thoughts. And for those of you listeners who have ever heard Jay Brinkman speak, it is not only extremely informative, intelligent, but is just also oftentimes very entertaining. The way he can get you to grab onto the facts. Sometimes they're not always so pleasant, but he does it in such a way that makes them really informative and entertaining to listen as anything. Joe, let's talk about last week. Mortgage rates. It was good for mortgage weeks last week.
Yeah, mortgage rates improved. Mortgage rates improved a little bit. MBS prices ended near the highest they've been. And that was, again, due to things going on in Europe, continued concern about debt issues. And as that progressed during the week, MBS prices improved. It was kind of nice to see that MBS prices improved. Treasury yields fell, but the stock market didn't get hit too bad last week. So, with Europe being a mess, it's just going to be top of the news throughout the weeks to come, and hopefully Jay will be able to clear some of that up for us. Last week we had a mixture of economic results. We had retail sales slowed from the month before and were short of expectations. However, the regional manufacturing indexes blew away expectations. So it was a little surprising.
That was really curious. Yeah, that was surprising.
Industrial production fell. inflation reports came out last week, and it was good to see that the inflation remains tame. The core CPI, though, is rising. I look back this time last year, it was rising at an annual rate of 0.8%. It's now at 2.2%. So, you know, it's moving in a direction that will cause it to be a concern, but not so much of a concern right now. It's at the lower end of the good area in the eyes of the Fed.
Yeah.
We had very strong auctions last week, as you'd expect, with the concerns out of Europe pushing investors the way they were. You know, and the Fed meeting occurred last week, and it was almost a non-event. It was like nothing happened. No one expected anything to happen, and they didn't make any
surprises.
And they
didn't disappoint.
No, they were right on target there. They're communicating well.
Yeah, they are. I think that's, you know, there's a sense that that brings a certain level of stability that, you know, what they're saying, and we're not getting hit with any surprises, which is encouraging. Again, loved. Can't wait to get Jay's perspective of that here later in the program. Let's talk about this week. What's coming up? There's a number of significant announcements that we need to watch
housing,
for.
Yeah, housing data comes out. Housing starts tomorrow. Existing home sales on Wednesday. New home sales on Friday. Thursday, we have consumer sentiment leading indicators, which you know, aren't usually huge market movers. Durable orders comes out on Friday, and so does core PCE, the inflation measure that the Fed likes to look at so much, and so it'll be important to watch. We have Treasury auctions again this week. This week it's the 2, 5, and 7. Last week was the longer term, the 3, 10, and 30. But it's easy to anticipate a lot of volatility for the remainder of the year. Light trading volumes generally create a lot of volatility, and it's just a matter of you know, having to watch it and expect it and deal with it.
It's going to be an interesting to see how we close out this year, especially as the traders start getting ready for positioning themselves for the end of the year and the holiday time off, and so it'll be real fascinating. So certainly not boring, but that's a good reason why people need MBS Quote Line. It's one of the most valuable services, and I mean, the different ones that use it, some of the industry leaders are looking at your system on a regular basis. Joe, we really appreciate you bringing us this update each and every week. I hope you're geared up for a good holiday.
Absolutely, Dave.
All right, appreciate you being with us. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you be a part of the broadcast each and every week, and many of you tune in for this next segment. By the way, there's a lot going on in the news. I just wrapped up a Fox Business interview with Connell McShane on the at the 11 o'clock hour of Eastern, on the Eastern time zone. And go on to the Fox Business website, www.foxbusiness.com. Click on videos, type in my last name. You'll watch my comments about some of the latest breaking news as it relates to the SEC lawsuits towards the Fannie Mae ex-Fannie Mae execs. You'll get that. We're going to be on talking about that some over the holidays. Stay tuned. We'll tell you more about those broadcasts. But keeping us tuned in to everything that's going on inside of the Beltway legislatively that affects our industry, we have Alice Albee, President of Mortgage U. Alice, so good to have you here with us again. And Merry Christmas, Alice, to you and your team, to Jen Wetzel, your partner in the business there at Wetzel Trott, one of the best QC firms in the country. And I want the best. What? One of the best? The best. Get it right here. But anyway, I know she's chuckling in her office. She's listening to us talk about that. Alice, give us an update. What's going on legislatively?
Well, it's crazy. You know, it's amazing how sometimes you can say, okay, the topic is the middle class tax relief, right? The idea of we need the extension. And when you hear it on the surface, you go, yeah, I want my tax break extended. And then someone throws in mortgage fees and FHA premiums
into the law. I know, but the G thing right in the middle of that.
Right, you're going, hello, what do those two things have to do with each other? And then you get, well, something's got to fund this, you know, all these tax credits. So in this H.R. 3630, which was just introduced December 9th, passed the House the 13th, you know, in record time, then passes the Senate on Saturday of all days.
Wow.
So now we're, as you look at all the wording and you're trying to get a handle on all the politics going on here, that just from the mortgage aspect of it, it's got two parts. It's looking to increase the guarantee fee an average of 10 basis points for each origination year or book year above the average fees imposed in 2011. And this is the FHFA director shall prohibit any enterprise from offsetting the cost of the fee to mortgage originators, borrowers, and investors by decreasing their charges, fees, or premiums, or in any other manner. So you start reading this, you go, okay, great. Where's the money coming from? And is it going straight to the Treasury?
Yeah.
Is one of the comments in here. Now, one thing that some people like is that it would provide uniform pricing among the lenders. It doesn't reference Ginnie Mae specifically, that they would have to also get an increase, but there's discussion from certain news reports. National Mortgage News is reporting that, you know, they're talking about a Ginnie Mae increase of the same 10 basis points. So this is now passed the House, passed the Senate, and has to get reconciled. I don't see as of now that there's actually a committee hearing or anything scheduled. I'm looking at the website right now, but we'll see. That's going to have to happen, although the Senate's gone, I think. So I don't know who's resolved.
Well, they may not be gone. Boehner is saying that he's not accepting what was produced by the Senate. So that may be that news developments on that, but certainly it'll be interesting. So I thought they were gone. I'm not sure. I'm getting reports as I was driving back from my Fox broadcast that may not be the case. So that may be going into the holidays a little bit. Interesting.
Well, I would think they have to, because I think the taxpayers are very anxious to try and find out if they've got an extension, you know, of that reduction in the Social Security piece. So it's two parts. It's not only a change in the guarantee fee that's charged by Fannie and Freddie, but it's also an increase in the FHA annual premium. Now, it says it would be phased in by the secretary, so we don't know what that, you know, how that would come about. So, you know, essentially, I don't know, about $9 on every $100,000 loan, every $100,000 borrowed. So that makes a difference. I mean, we already have Streamline Refi customers not qualifying because of the net tangible benefit and change in the premiums. So that all remains to be seen. And, you know, then there's all the arguments about the fact that the Keystone XL pipeline stuff was looped into the bill. So, you know, I guess all we can do is watch from my vantage point here. But heads up, brace yourself.
Yeah, I think you raise a really comment. Now that the mortgage industry, specifically the G fees, it's like Congress has discovered another revenue item.
Right.
And so they go, well, let's jack up the G fees and send over the Treasury to solve some of the other shortfall. I mean, that is worrisome to me, but I think it's a very good analysis. I think and then God forbid, I mean, the Ginnie Mae announcement that they made nearly $1 billion. Last year would also be tempting to a spend-happy Congress. So let's see what goes on. Good analysis. What about H.R. 3644?
Well, this one was to, you know, it's Representative Senator Gary out of New Jersey that his bill, H.R. 3644, the text is still not available online as of Sunday, but this is supposed to increase standardization, transparency, and ensure the rule of law of the MBS market. And this is supposedly his plan for, you know, unwinding Fannie and Freddie. Well, we have that to match up with the other whatever 15 bills that are sitting out there with everybody. ideas on what to do with Fannie and Freddie. You know, people keep going, okay, that one didn't work, let's try another one. So there's also Senate Bill 1834, which talks about this wind down of Fannie and Freddie and goes through all those components, which I won't cover here because I want to make sure we have plenty of time for Jay. But I do want everybody to be aware we have another bill. I added this to the write-up, Dave, after I sent it to you, that we have H.R. 3630, I'm sorry, without H.R. 3630, so that's the one with the FHA MIP and the G fee increase. We now have Senate Bill 1997. Again, no text, but we've got Senator David Vitter is announcing that he's going after FHA. You know, I looked at his record. He's gone after FHA for several years now, saying they've got to get their capital ratio under control, and that he's trying to prohibit the taxpayers and the Treasury from ever being able to bail out the FHA, and that they've got to get their right. So you're talking about potentially huge increases if something like that were to ever pass. So just a heads up. I mean, it's no doubt something's going to happen to FHA MIP premiums coming up here.
Well, would that essentially eliminate the full faith and credit provisions?
Well, you know, it's maybe we need to ask him if he's thought about that, right?
Have you considered?
Right? There's this little clause out there, right? You know, so I understand, and nothing is mentioned in that. It would just be assessing fines and penalties. He just has a quick three-bullet summary on his website. Prohibits secret bailouts of the FHA, assesses penalties if the fund fails to maintain a ratio of 2%. You know, because if somebody can't pay you, you should charge them more. I'm sorry. and it's a statutory required 2% capital reserve within 2 years. So that's what he's pushing for. So that's going to have to mean an increase in premiums, too. So just a heads up, I guess, on that. I do want to also just kind of let everybody know that the Uniform Loan Data Delivery Program has been extended. So I think that's helpful. Let's take that as not being this major IT project that we have to race out in the first quarter of the year. People should take that as a little bit of breathing room to focus on their operations with the UAD, the Uniform Appraisal Data Set, making sure your portal transitions are all working smoothly. Get it out of underwriting from an operational standpoint. Don't keep making your underwriters the center of the wheel. So anyway, just a little heads up that we did get an extension till March from Fannie and Freddie on the Uniform Loan Data Delivery Program. So that'll help.
Good.
Two proposed rules out there open for comment that we've talked about before, the HUD Fair Lending Proposal and the Volcker Rule. Both of those comment periods are open into January. So watch what's going on with this bill, H.R. 3630. Something's going to happen before the end of the year, we hope.
Something's going to happen, yeah. So, yep, stay tuned, folks. You definitely want to stay focused. So January 17th, any idea for the comments that have come in, Alice?
On the HUD Fair Lending Proposed Rule, I have not dissected all of those yet. I'd rather, I don't want to shoot from the hip here, so maybe we can cover that on another program and let folks
we'll
know
that,
what comments. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Volcker Rule, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think a lot of folks agree that does need to, you know, come into an effect. That's a piece out of the Dodd-Frank Act, Section 619 of the Dodd-Frank Act. So I don't think there's a lot of opposition to that, but I'll go check, and we can talk about it on another show.
Well, I look forward to it. Alice, thank you so much. You and your crew work so hard to bring us these updates all the time. You're in there researching them, and I know it's a lot of work, and you're busy. You are one busy person there, and so for you to be taking time out of your busy week to research all this and bring it to us every week is really appreciated by myself, our listeners, and even, interesting enough, some inside the Beltway like tune in and get our perspective on it. How about that, Alice?
Well, I appreciate that, because I'm certainly the one on the street here with everybody who keeps watching all this stuff fall on them.
Our gal on the street, Alice Alvey and Snowy Cole, Detroit. Thank you so much. Folks, stay help us see people see the issues and respond appropriately. Thank you so much, Alice. Merry Christmas, folks. We'll be right back after this break with Jay Brinkman. Don't want to miss that segment, and we'll be up with that in just right after this break. Thank you so much.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. One of the joys of being able to host this program is the fact that we get to talk to so many leading industry professionals, and certainly today's guest is one of those individuals. I first met Jay a number of years ago listening to him to speak at the industry. I was just so encouraged by the fact Jay just was so brought the information forward to the audience, but did it in such a way where he took complex things, made it easy to understand, but added an element of humor. Sometimes we have to get Jay on one of these broadcasts. Tell him about his assessments of the CDOs and the comparison to a trash compactor. It was a brilliant analogy and one I'll never forget. And I've used it several times, and I've tried to give him the credit every time we've used it. But, folks, anyway, with us today we have Jay Brinkman. He has been around the industry of mortgage banking for a lot of years. The last 11 years he has been with the MBA. He has been the chief economist since 2008. He spent a number of years on Capitol Hill as the deputy chief to staff to the governor of Louisiana, his home state, by the way. He's from down in our country. He is a former college professor. I always love listening to a good professor. I would love to send some of your classes, Jay. And he specialized in the most exciting topic a college could just couldn't wait to sign up for, bank regulation issues. That's only Alice Alvey would have been in sitting in that audience, I think. But anyway, he also holds an MBA from Tulane and a PhD in finance from Purdue. Jay Brinkman, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Dave, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It is always a pleasure to enjoy the conversation. And, folks, for any of you know, I'm on Fox and get interviewed on Fox fairly regularly. Jay's one of the guys, and I get a phone call, and I have to jump in the car and drive downtown, get in front of that camera, and as I'm driving, Jay's always one of the guys I call, he and Doug Duncan, call and say, what's your perspective on this? And I just use some of Jay's great talking points, so I try to give him credit for it all the time. But I really appreciate Jay being a resource to this industry. Thank you for being a resource to me as I'm scrambling to get my talking points together before I go on national television. But I appreciate it. I want to Joe Farr at MBS Quoteline always give us an update on the rates, and I really want to toss the mic over to Joe to start our discussion off, Jay, and get into that. So, Joe, if you could get into some of your talking points or some of the questions that you had for our guest.
Sure. Jay, the MBA's put out their forecast for, you know, the remainder of this year and then what to expect in 2012. And one, I got to applaud you for an ability just to do that with so many variables out there like Europe, like G fees and HARP and Fannie and Freddie. I mean, your forecast for production for next year was, I think, $931 billion. And I just wondered how did you weigh those, some of these variables, you know, especially Europe, in what to expect for originations next year, and then maybe some of these other things as well.
Sure, Joe. The key when I do that is we know there are a lot of things that might happen, but what we end up doing is saying what is, in a sense, our best guess. What is most likely to happen? And so as a result, when I go around and talk to people about this is our forecast, I put it up on the screen, and then the very next slide says, okay, let me tell you why I'm going to be wrong. These are all the things that I can go wrong, as to either why we're going to have a much better year than what I've got up here or why we're going to have a worse year. But I want you to join me in the misery of trying to come up with the best guess of what we're likely to see next year. So with that, I think we're pretty confident on the purchase side, which is we're looking at 12 as being somewhat flat to last year. While we've had some pickup in jobs, the employment picture in different parts of the country was looking better. I don't know that we're going to see that translate in 2012 into higher purchases. Our year for that is 2013, where that's going to pick up. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're putting out a study this week that looks at consumer attitudes towards buying homes, and they're still very strong. One of the problems is people's attitudes towards selling, those are at an all-time low. So if you got a house to sell, they don't like the prices, they don't want to sell. But in terms of buying, people are saying, we'd really like to buy a house now if we could, if we got the rest of our life straightened out. So look for that.
Yeah, I'm going to know where can they Where can they find that, Jay? I want to make it's on the NBA website. I want to continue
on. It's on the NBA website. It'll be released in a. I don't know if it's going out tomorrow or the following day. They don't give me the details around here. But if you go to mortgagebankers.org, look to the research page, which has all of our information, and there's a link to something called the Research Institute for Housing America, which we run here in my research group. And this paper is one that we funded out of that, and will be coming out this week.
Joe, back to you. I'm sorry. I want to make sure our listeners knew where to go to get this.
Yeah. And Jay, I saw that you anticipate a reduction in refinance activity, and that certainly makes sense given the volume we've had this year. And most who can refi have refied, except as it relates to HARP 2. Have you built into the $400 billion in refinance volume much from HARP 2, or is that a variable to the upside?
The short answer is no. We have not built it in. The long answer is we haven't yet, because we've been fooled in the past about promises of what HARP might look like, given the absence of some of the details, the delay in when the new DU structure, LP structure will be there to reflect it. And some estimates about what it might mean. It could be in the range now, they're saying perhaps $25 billion a quarter. So that could increase things perhaps as much as $100 billion then in the refi market over the course of 2012. And we'll reflect that once we see some of the final estimates of what the program to do or not.
But
do.
That'd be huge, obviously. I mean, that's a 10% increase in volume and would put us back on par just about with volume from this year.
It would be, and that is sort of an outside estimate. So I think we'll probably be coming in somewhere inside of that, but just don't have a measure yet. I think the bigger factor on refis has been just how low can rates possibly go. 10-year back down again, so we're still looking at fairly sizable spreads to mortgage rates. If we are to see something, it may be a case that we see those spreads come in, but I think there are a number of reasons why they probably won't. Most of the folks I talk to say, look, we have a drop in rates, we see a spike in refis for a week or two, and then it settles back down. So going forward, I think 15-year refis, things like that, maybe will carry the market through some of 2012, but we've certainly seen a lot of the market now burned out.
Well, that begs the obvious question, which is where do you see rates this time next year?
Well, this time next year, I think we're going to be not too much higher. I'd probably say around the 4.45, what is about 3.87, I guess, was a par rate, or 3.8 or so last week. So, you know, going up a little more than 50 basis points by year end. With the overhang in Europe, there's just going to be a tremendous demand for anything dollar-denominated fixed income, and that's going to hold things down.
Yeah. Well, and I guess this leads into one of the questions Dave wants to get into, that I assume presumes no increase, no congressionally mandated increase in guarantee fees.
Well, yeah. 10% increase was not included in our forecast on rates. And I got to say, I've been sitting, Dave mentioned, I guess I first went to work on Capitol Hill about 38 years ago now. I guess that shows my age. But so a lot of things, nothing shocks me anymore, and few things surprise me. But the idea of taking money out of Social Security, attempting to replace it by putting money into the general fund and have that come through a essentially this tax on the home buying process, my immediate thought was, well, for years I've seen the Social Security deduction from my paycheck. Do we have to list the Social Security payment now on the HUD-1 as an additional payment?
I love that.
I'm gonna have to, right?
That is,
I don't know,
great.
So he's got to check that in RESPA, right?
I didn't look at where we're going with all this. Europe, talk to you a little bit about Europe's, you know, what's your thoughts? And Are there anything out of left field that could be impacting rates and some of the forecasts as it relates to Europe? It's in our news constantly. We know it's driving so much of it. I know you've taken that into consideration, Jay, but what should we be looking – another way to ask a question, what should we be looking for as kind of an out-of-the-blue that could just have a sudden spike to interest rates? Don't imagine things rate can get much lower, but they might, but it's incremental. But the correction, if it does happen, could be significant. What are the out-of-the-blue incident issues that could affect that?
If we suddenly had a rational plan that would preserve the euro – that would lead to an orderly settlement of the situation in Greece, Italy, and elsewhere. The perception then that the European economy would hold still, and perhaps most importantly, that there would not be the pressure on the financial institutions of Europe that are still facing the overhang of the sovereign debt, as well as what the potential impact now of a European recession would be on the bank earnings, all tied into new Basel rules and that sort of thing.
Right.
If something were worked out, that I think would immediately cause rates then to go up. I'm not expecting that. I think we're still going to see sort of this fortnightly cycle of summits, and we think we've got it worked out, and everybody goes home and checks the details and speeches, and maybe not so much. You know, again, think of Europe. Europe, we're dealing with countries that were essentially subprime borrowers. They were able to borrow at much lower rates for a long period of time. And then we found out in the case of Greece in particular, they were also stated income borrowers. They were lying about their income. And it's not going to be an easy thing to work out. Keep in mind the types of labor reforms they are pushing on the Italian government. There were two people assassinated by the Red Brigade back, I guess, as recently as 1999, for making these exact same proposals. So there is a strong political leftist climate that is going to get more and more, I don't know the exact word, I don't want to say necessarily bloody, but they are going to take a very strong position against this. And that is the real political fight we'll be facing in Europe through 2012 that will make some of these demonstrations look very mild.
I think you always bring a historical perspective to things, and so history, hopefully, we will begin to keep some of that in our back of our minds as we look into and move forward with what goes on there. Let's talk about politics here at home this year. We're entering one of the most crazy political seasons, again, happens every 4 years, and we're certainly going to see one of the, as some say, zanier things come out. I don't know that. Do you see that having an impact on interest rates? I doubt that would, but it's certainly going to enter. There'd be a lot of discussion about Fannie Freddie. Let's start with interest rates. Any effect as a result of politics, the political season?
I don't. I think that generally the economy is going to be in a slow period, combined with both the uncertainty in Europe and the uncertainty over where we're going with tax policy, and I think a lot of things will simply be put on hold pending the outcome of the November elections one way or the other. And so given that, I don't see much of an upward pressure on interest rates. And then offsetting that, one of the difficulties in forecasting interest rates is what asset class will the Fed start buying in any particular week. And so they could, in fact, step in and decide to offset any natural increase in rates as a result of greater demand for debt, greater investment. But at the moment, with companies and others sitting on so much cash, I just don't see the private demand stepping in that would drive up those rates.
It's interesting to see how that could affect. What do you think? What's your take on the SEC's filing of the charges against the six former executives? Any thought, any commentary to that?
Well, I saw the stories. I guess the one thing that came to mind is I don't know how you define a subprime loan. So for them to say that there was greater subprime exposure, those definitions change over time. In fact, the definition that I always heard was, well, anything the agencies won't buy, we consider subprime. So if the agencies buy it by definition. but really, when you go down to say, well, what was the LTV profile? What was the percentage stated income? What was the percentage credit score? Measures like that were in their exposure profiles, then I wonder, well, what numbers in there were actually wrong? Were they just going on other statements which said, well, we're not buying subprime? Yeah, that's a squishy definition. I don't know that that's sufficient to make a legal case. But again, I'm the finance guy here, not the lawyer.
Well, I think there's certainly Fannie and Freddie were not out publishing guidelines. At least I didn't see them, that they were out there saying that we will buy on the front side. I think that they were under pressure, is what seemed to be the case, to when so much was going that way, the momentum, the shift in the market, so they bought after the fact a lot of securities. I'm not sure that they had any of those in as much as some would like to think into DU and LP. So what is your thoughts on the future of Fannie and Freddie? We talked about this on my way into the Fox Broad to do the Fox broadcast. Staying around, surviving, going away, or coming together in some form or a new thing. What's your thoughts? Share it with our listeners, please.
Well, MBA came out with its proposals September of 2009, so a little over 2 years ago now, and it still is serving as a centerpiece for a lot of discussion around town. It was essentially served as one of the proposals that the Obama administration came out with earlier, at the beginning of this year. They came out with sort of three ideas without necessarily endorsing any one of the three, and the third one was a proposal similar to what MBA put out. Very simply, it's this. We would eliminate the congressional charters for Fannie and Freddie to say that that's really one of the sources of the problems, that it had this implicit
right.
guarantee because of those charges. Let's turn these agencies and other companies into companies that would be chartered like any other financial institution. So you would institute competition for pricing, delivery, all of the other things that you would want the GSEs to compete on. They would then estimate the credit, price the credit accordingly in the guarantee fee, not unlike what they do now or more like an MI company with true, more risk-based pricing. The loans then would be securitized, and then they would have a federal wrap around them, not unlike a Ginnie wrap. Now, in exchange for that wrap, which would be explicitly limited, there would be an explicit charge and an insurance fund similar to what the FDIC sets up. So you'd
right.
be paying for that wrap, you'd be paying into the insurance fund, and so then the exposure would be just limited to that set of securities over and above what the insurance fund would cover. Would get away from this business of implicitly guaranteeing any and everything Fannie and Freddie wanted to do and not being paid for it. We would have explicit charges for explicitly limited support. And we think that's the proper role because that will keep the TBA market going.
I agree.
You price against it. And we think that would be sufficient then to bring private capital back into entities like Fannie and Freddie going forward. But it's going to take a while to get the system set up. And
right.
quite frankly, I think there'd be advantages to starting with something new. On the other side of that, we have some have argued for, well, simply eliminate it, go to a strictly private market, take a look at what exists elsewhere. I'm not sure at the moment we've got the bank balance sheet capacity or anything else to support even a bunch of adjustable rate loans. FHA, we get the monthly numbers,
yep.
and they have been consistently running between 48 and 49% of all purchase applications for months now. So do we really want FHA to be half of the market?
No.
So anything we do with the agencies are going to have to take the FHA share and position into account. So in summary, that's where we're trying to go with this. I don't expect anything meaningful to happen during 2012. Really, it's going to come in 2013 with the new Congress.
Right.
But keep in
right.
mind, anything that they do now, anything we see from Congressman Hensarling or Garrett or others, will be setting then the intellectual framework for what gets adopted or proposed in 2013. And that's why we're stepping up and answering every one of these proposals of saying, well, we'll dictate the form of a new TBA market, or we simply are going to have them eliminated completely, and we'll have all these subordinated pieces that seem to look good on paper. And I try and remind people of what happened in 2007, where the AAAs in many cases continued to trade, but try to unload some of that BP stuff.
Yes.
That's why the market data is reaching all. Yeah, we've been through it before. So.
Yeah, exactly. And what's so interesting is the fact that the MBA has this position paper and is studying all these. I think there's such a value to be a part of the MBA. And many people are saying, do I want to be a part of the MBA? It's such a big organization. It serves the interests of some. Does it serve the interests of everybody? Let me tell you, folks, what Jay's just talking about right there, it serves all of us. I don't care if you're a smallest little shopping out there in the backside of some rural community or serving some of the or the largest financial institution. We need the MBA in this position, especially in these issues. They are the loudest, most credible voice that we could have, and they're located in D.C. It's close to that. My goal is to get Jay on television more, helping drive this debate. We're certainly doing everything we can to do that. And I just applaud what you're doing there, Jay. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief word. We've got our special guest, Jay Brinkman, Chief Economist of the MBA.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Lick, and I also want to talk one about our other new sponsors out there that is very exciting, has got an exciting announcement. It's our friends there at New Penn Financial. We had Bob Wexler on the program here recently talking about some of the programs that just out of agency product. It is so encouraging to see that these products are coming back. You need to get on their website. You need to go over and check it out. To get a link to them, you can go to our website, www.lickinonlending.com. You'll see the phone number. Call them. Talk to them about their programs. Click down that link, and it'll take you right into their website and give you a lot of information about what's going on. Again, New Penn Financial, Bob Wexler. Go get that broadcast. Listen to it. Download it on your phone because there's a lot of great information about some of the things that are developing in the secondary markets relating to products that you need to be successful in the upcoming year. Again, New Penn Financial, head over there, take a look at it. The best way to get to that is by clicking on the Lickin' on Lending website, on the ad within the Lickin' on Lending website, or calling the phone number, the 1-800 phone number that is there. It's a great product, and don't miss and download and listen to Bob Wexler talking about some of this. One of the things I'm most excited about is who's involved with him, Lou Ranieri. If you know anything about Lou Ranieri, the father of the mortgage-backed security, he is in this financially. He's in this program. He is excited about it. Guys, follow the money. Follow intelligent people. Lou's back in the game. He bought New Penn with two other companies. It's a partnership, and I'm telling you, that's a significant event in our industry, and it's one that has to be monitored, and especially if you're an originator out there looking for creative products to meet your income objectives this next year. Check them out. New Penn Financial, appreciate them being a new sponsor. And now back to our special guest, Jay Brinkman with the MBA. Jay, I want to thank you so much. So much of the perspective we've been talking about that's in the news today is the G fees. Oh, the increase on this. Briefly cover that, and then I want to toss it over to Alice. She's got some questions I know she wants to get to. But your perspective on the increase of the G fees, some of the discussion that's going on there, Jay?
Right. I think the problem with the G fee increase is not so much the magnitude, because let's face it, under what we had been proposing for the GSEs actually would probably result in an increased G fee. I don't think that amount's going to be enough to impact the purchase market in any great way. It'll probably speed up, obviously, the when we have a cutoff in the refi market. But what is most concern to me is the precedent that it sets. stepping in and saying, well, we're going to take this money out of this activity, put it into the general fund, and then we're using that as just sort of, well, since it's there, we'll then say, okay, we're covering the shortfall now we're creating in the Social Security Trust Fund by now for a second year, cutting that off, all of which for an economic stimulus that, if it exists, is very small from this payroll deduction. So I'm more concerned about the precedent than the actual magnitude.
I agree. It's paying, you know, robbing from Peter to pay Paul, and it's really taking the funds out of where we need to keep them, you know, to keep a healthy secondary market. Alice, let's get you in on the discussion.
Dave?
Oh, Joe, you got something? Come on.
But before we leave the GFI, I wanted to kind of get a sense of how much we think that might be. I know the legislation would require a minimum of 10 basis points, but it also talks about it being an amount that would be similar to what a private regulated financial institution would charge for the risk. And, you know, that could be 100 basis points. Do you have a sense of what that might be, how much the increase might be?
All the discussion I have heard has been in the 10 basis point range. So I would think that if the regulator were given that charge, the regulator would have a hard time trying to come back and actually finding a comparable example. It's clear that there are some in Congress who see this fee not so much as a way of funding the shortfall created by the drop in Social Security contributions as how do you limit the size, whether it's Fannie, Freddie, or FHA. You've essentially got three options. One is on the loan size, second is on the size of the credit box, and a third one is what you charge for it. You try and price people out of the market. And I think what they're saying is we're not going to see a resurgence of any sort of private label until we make the GSE option more expensive. I don't think 10 basis points is enough to get you there, and I don't think going to 100 makes any sense because it's not clear that the rest of the market would come about even for that kind of difference. So.
Yeah, and I think one version, just I think it was the Senate version that had it at 12.5. So it's not going that much higher, at least from these initial discussions.
Alice?
Yes. Oh, I'm still here. Yep. All right. Well, I just wanted to, Jay, I just wanted to ask you a question. You know, we've talked a little bit about the GFI here, but I'm really interested in the housing stock issues and how this plays in the recovery. I mean, more and more I've had people say, you know, in a particular area in their market, they can really feel the change in how fast short sales are getting approved. And all of a sudden it'll be a pocket market where you feel that, you know, one of the large financial entities has dumped a bunch of properties into the market, and you don't know if they're doing this strategically or if we still have this huge housing stock that's going to hit us. We have existing housing stock. So can you talk a little bit to that on how much that's going to play into the recovery and the shadow inventory?
The overhang from the shadow inventory will continue to play out, but as you described, it's going to differ from market to market. When we go through and look at, for example, the loans in foreclosure as what we look at as a shadow market of what's not actually out there, even though some of these, the houses are in fact listed while it's going through the foreclosure process, five states, California, Florida, Illinois, New York, and New Jersey account for 52% of all of those. So more than half of what the country has is in those states. And I think the last time I looked at Florida, their loans in foreclosure, just that are in foreclosure, were more than the state of Louisiana had in terms of total loans outstanding. So you're trying to foreclose in Florida as if you had to foreclose on every single loan in the state of Louisiana. That's the magnitude of what's going on in Florida, and that's really differentially driving the numbers in a different way nationally than what we would see if you pulled Florida out and a few other states. So where we're still seeing the holdup is with some judicial foreclosure laws. California right now, for example, has a lower percentage of loans in foreclosure than Kentucky, Delaware, South Carolina. These other states have come up. And so those states, even though it's smaller in numbers, might have a bigger impact. Something to keep in mind, though, this Wednesday, the National Realtors Association will be releasing their latest numbers on existing home sales. Those numbers are going to carry with them a significant reduction in the sales that they've been reporting since 2007. So keep an eye on that, because I'm not entirely sure what that does to the reported numbers of inventory, but certainly the sales numbers since 07 are going to be reduced, and we're probably talking in something in the aggregate of several million. So that is why I'm a little hesitant about looking at specific inventory numbers right now until they come out with that revised number on Wednesday.
Yeah, so it just continues to be that as all the housing, the movement of the housing continues to stay slow and oversaturated with houses, that prices, there's just continued pressure on the price of on the home prices. I just don't see how it's reasonable to think that consumers are going to increase their spending as the value of their home keeps declining. So, you know, I don't know. It just seems like we'll be lucky if we can stay stable in 2012.
Well, it could be. One of the numbers we look at is the data put out by CoreLogic. CoreLogic, mm-hmm. beginning this year, picked up for the first time a divergence between the prices on distressed sales and the prices on non-distressed. And so the key, I think, is going to be in any particular area, it's logical, but what is the impact of the percentage of the distressed sales and how is that affecting average prices in the market? Because we know why, as soon as you put a foreclosure sign on a house, that's equivalent to about a 30% decline or on average. But in fact, we are seeing over the course of the year steady increases in the prices of homes where there's not a distressed sale. And to me, that's a good sign. To me, that's a sign of strength in some of the better markets. But we still have this overall problem of inventory that's going to continue to drive prices in certain markets.
Well, and we'll just keep watching that, because there's certainly a lot of markets, they feel like it's very rare to even have a non-distressed sale. It seems like they're all somewhat distressed, you know. Oh, I got a real seller. Look, hey, everybody. You know, just to change it, how do you see QM and QRM affecting all of this?
Not in a good way.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's the sad part.
Not in a good way. QRM is, I mean, QM, I think, is ultimately going to be a bigger issue as it affects everyone across the board. Not the sort of safe haven that we need. It simply opens up mortgage ambiguous guidelines to enforcement by the private bar. And so people getting sued and that sort of thing as to what their interpretation is of what's being proposed in QM. QRM, the issue there is all of they really don't understand. I say they, meaning the folks that put this regulation together. How do you incent underwriter and lender behavior? What do you
yeah.
put in place that would actually improve underwriting? And the argument is, if I, as an underwriter or as a lender, have to make a judgment about stated income, about whether or not this person should be underwritten at this point in a with an adjustable rate mortgage or some sort of mortgage where there's some judgment involved, that I can see where the lender's saying to the market, I've looked at this person, and in my judgment, they can do it, and I'm willing to put some capital up against it. On the other hand, though, when you start looking at things like LTV and DTI, that's just arithmetic. You can go out and spend $20,000 finding out everything on a borrower back to whether or not they ever stiffed anybody on a bar bill in college or who knows what.
Yeah.
It's not going to change the LTV or the DTI on that mortgage. So I'm not certain why it is the regulators thought it necessary to put in this this capital requirement, essentially, this holding requirement on stuff over which the underwriter has absolutely no control. It can't impact their behavior. And in fact, for underwriters that are relying on really someone else's credit model, they're going to be saying, well, I don't know what's in that black box. You're asking me to hold this
right.
against credit over which I have no control. Guess what? I'm not going to hold it.
this would have been one of my biggest contentions. Yep, because we don't know what's in the black box. Yeah.
And we're going to see, I think, these loans that are slightly outside the QRM box go into some form, alternative form of execution. So a step up with the REITs and others that can hold them in portfolio. The ones that we'll see trading perhaps will be at the high end. So you end up at the barbell type market. You end up with the super safe loans trading, the stuff in the middle being held someplace in portfolio, and the other ones, which would be the new subprime market, trading outside, trading sort of as a small market. As a result, I think you're going to see investor guidelines for pension funds and others saying you can only invest in securities backed by QRM mortgages, and we just see the rest of the market disappear because of these other regulators that will step in.
It is such a great discussion, and I just hate to end the, something that's so enjoyable. Jay, every time we sit down and visit with you, I just enjoy listening to your insights, and we can't wait to have you back. We really, really want to get your perspective on an ongoing basis. Hopefully we'll have you back at least on a quarterly basis. We'd love that. I would like to wrap up this segment by saying that the MBA has gone through, the industry has gone through significant changes. The MBA also has gone through some significant changes. Why? We're members of the MBA. Alice is, Joe is, we're all part of this thing. We want to know what, we want our listeners to know why they should be considering a membership with the MBA. Talk to us briefly. It's just a few minutes left in here, but I want to make sure our listeners know why they need to draw in and become a part of it.
Here are the major points. One is you've got to be part of the debate. I don't know when it has ever been that the industry has been under this much of an attack. And if your livelihood, if your personal capital, if your intellectual capital is tied into the mortgage business, you've got to have a voice in how that is going to change. And it's not just having a voice, but you know, contributing to the resources that it's going to need, that we need, just to get our message across, to being in the face of these legislators, in the face of the regulators, in the face of the news media on a regular basis, just trying to get the message across. We are still the best place for networking. Coming into our meetings being able to see what's going on, being brought up to date on the latest items. And then the third thing is we're in a process of rolling out even more types of products that help run your business. What do we have in the way of benchmarking activities? What do we have in the way of market intelligence information about what happened to your with applications of a particular type in your state over the previous month. Things like this, we will be coming out, and that's going to be just for members. So I think there's going to be a differential operating benefit for lenders who are part of the MBA as opposed to not being in it.
Well, I'm so excited. You and I, you've tipped your hand. Let me know some of the things that are coming out. We'll let you guys make the announcement. But listeners, I'm telling you, there are some tools that the MBA is making available, developing, specifically some of Jay's area. If you're looking to get involved with Ginnie Mae and working with Ginnie Mae in an active way, what are the economics involved? I'll tell you, there's going to be some tools coming out that are going to be very, very valuable. I'm very excited about what the MBA is doing, some things that refocusing and doubling down in some areas and going in some new directions that David Stevens, as a result of him becoming the president, is, I think, significant. Jay, thank you so much for being a part of the program today. We really appreciate it. I want to wish you and your family a very, very Merry Christmas, and, of course, the same to everyone there at the MBA.
Dave, thank you so much. And to you, Joe, Alice, and all of your listeners, Merry Christmas. And with the spirit of the new year, we'll get through it.
We will. We always have.
We will.
No question. Thank you, Jay. Merry Christmas. And greet everyone there at the MBA for us, would you please?
Will do. Thank you.
Thank you. Folks, we missed Andy Schell in this discussion. Several people have written and said, where's Andy? And he is with a client. And, you know, at some point in time, you got to pay the bills. And so Andy is with one of our clients. We've got a couple things we want to cover real quickly. Tony Garitano, good to have you on the program talking about mergers and acquisitions. Give me a quick update. What are some of the things we should be focusing on, technology, mergers and acquisitions that are important? We got about 1 minute before we got to play the music.
No problem. I'll be quick, Dave. You're seeing two different types of acquisitions. Number one, you have vendors that are acquiring competitors. You saw DocPrep, DocuTech buy the doc business at LFSI to consume a competitor and get more market share. You're also seeing companies buy technologies that are outside of their area of expertise to be more end-to-end. You saw that when Signiadox's parent company, which is an electronic workflow, electronic signature, electronic mortgage company that competes with people like Blitzdox and Keylink, acquire a servicing technology company in Depot Point, and those are going to continue hot and heavy into 2012.
Thank you, Tony. We got to have you back for one whole segment on all of this. Folks, we appreciate you staying tuned and listening to us on a regular basis. Have a great week, and Merry Christmas to all of you, and a Happy New Year. Look forward to talking to you next Monday.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.